an event to thank farm workers in South Yuma County, and a local grower talks about challenges for the agriculture season that's just underway. This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Victor Calderon. The Dia del Campesino is in its 31st year of providing free health services to thank farm workers. It takes place early in the morning in San Luis before they catch buses to work in the fields.
It's really truly a fiesta, a celebration for the farm workers, and we all, you know, are very pleased to be able to offer that to them.
And we take a look at Transgender Awareness Week at Arizona Western College.
I still love you as my kid. It's going to take me a while to get used to the pronouns and the name and stuff, but I love you and I support you. And that was really big.
Those stories coming up on Arizona Edition.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Victor Calderon. For the past 31 years, Campesinos Sin Fronteras has held the Dia del Campesino in San Luis. The goal is to thank farm workers by offering free food, medical services, and items like blankets and bicycles. I spoke with Campesinos' founder and director, Emma Torres, as the group gets ready for this year's event early in the morning on December 5th.
Well, this event, we organized it thinking about how to recognize the great work and effort that farm workers, the agricultural industry, has for our community, the impact, the contribution that it has. It's oftentimes, not even, we see our beautiful green fields, we see the people working, but we don't think about the impact that we're doing and that we're actually feeding the whole country. Yuma produces, it's considered the winter lettuce capital of the world. So it produces most of the leafy greens that people will enjoy in their tables during Thanksgiving, during Christmas. And it's often, as I mentioned, not considering, the effort that it takes from planting to harvesting. And the farm workers that we honor and celebrate on the Day of the Farm Worker are those that, they come, they work and leave. Oftentimes they're, not even seen, they're not even, known who they are. But we have farm workers that come from other states, Colorado, California, Washington, and commuters from across the border, a lot of H-2A workers that come. It's estimated that approximately 49,000, 60,000 people move into our communities to work and help with the harvest. So it's an incredible effort that we should all be proud of, but we also should be able to recognize the work that it takes and celebrate and appreciate those farm workers. And that's the reason why we began the Day of the Farm Worker 31 years ago. And we were right now joking about, we say the celebration, but then it's actually 31 years that it's, we're proud to still be here, still be around celebrating. And I think this event has become a national recognized event that I think it only takes place here in Yuma, the way that we do it. We have more than 40 to 60 organizations that come and provide services to the farm workers starting at 2 a.m. So they have to be here at midnight to set up. And the reason why we do that is because we're very sensitive to the needs it's the farm workers, and their day starts at that time. So oftentimes services are offered from 8 to 5, and they cannot access them. And that's why we do the event here where they gather to go to the fields, to take their buses and go to the fields. And we usually serve between 3,000 to 5,000 people in a period like of 4 hours. So it's an incredible work, but it's also very satisfying. You see all the individuals, all the organizations that come. We also, and they're very happy. You know, they're very pleased to be able to honor this population. We have organizations that come from San Diego, from Tucson, from Phoenix. We have universities, their students that come to serve the population as well. It's really truly a fiesta, a celebration for the farm workers, and we all, you know, are very pleased to be able to offer that to them.
In some of the agriculture communities like Salinas or Ventura, California, there's been concerns with like ICE, with immigration. Have you again heard anything for campesinos, people saying we saw ICE or we heard their ICE was rounding up workers, anything like that?
Well, Victor, one of the things that I always tell people here is we are in the border. You couldn't be crossing the border if you didn't have legal documents to come. So we have a lot of H-2A temporary workers. They come with a temporary visa to work in agriculture. So they're here legally, so they can come across every day and go back to Mexico. They choose to live across the border because sometimes there's no housing here or they cannot afford it. And because agricultural work is temporary, a lot of them cannot afford to have a year-round housing expense here. So that's the reason why they sacrifice themselves and their family having to cross that early morning. And that's something that a lot of times people do not consider, that this population that we have, you know, suffers a lot during the winter, that, you know, to do the work that they do and harvest the food, the fruits and vegetables that we put or bring to our tables. And we really hope that they can, you know, consider that and appreciate that these individuals are hardworking individuals. They are all legal that I know. You know, we have never had a problem with that because of, again, living in the border and having to cross, you know, through the international port of entry. You won't be able to do that without documents, and they're not going to expose themselves to just come and you know. So, no, we're not concerned about that. We are concerned that we're hearing that all of those, you know, as ICE raids are taking place other places, because, again, this population is so much needed. Agriculture is key to our survival. You know, that's one of the best staples that this country has. And
as farm workers head out to the fields, farm owners are also bracing for challenges, including rising costs that impact their bottom line. KAWC civic engagement reporter Alexandra Rangel went out to the fields to speak with farm leaders.
For KAWC News, I'm Alexandra Rangel. There's a lot that goes into keeping the winter salad bowl filled up.
But this one down here is dedicated just for vegetable crops.
For Matt McGuire, that prep doesn't start in the fall. It starts in summer.
Well, we start putting schedules together way back in June and July, and we're prepping ground and getting ready for this season that we're in right now.
McGuire has been farming for over 40 years and is the chief agricultural officer for J.V. Smith Companies. The company grows produce in four different states, including in Salinas, California, and Yuma.
Well, right now, as you can see, we're standing by a broccoli field on this side, a romaine field behind us. They're working a lettuce field over there.
I spoke with McGuire at the end of October. He drove me through some of the acres closest to town in Yuma, which will be nearing harvest soon.
Yeah, it's a little early. The crop in Salinas is ending early. It's not the best of quality, and they're short. And so they're starting down here this week, a few shippers. And then we'll get start in earnest next week.
Yuma County has more than 180,000 acres of agricultural land and supplies 90% of the leafy greens consumed in the U.S. during the winter. At this time of the year, every field is active, with work crews doing everything from planting, thinning, weeding, or harvesting.
Green fields like this, like you're seeing, and a lot of activity. We go from nothing to 100 miles an hour real fast. It's really quite something to watch all the fields green up and the crops grow and how fast they grow this time of year, and then it's really exciting for us.
Every year brings its own challenges, says McGuire, and part of the work is figuring out what needs to change and what still works. I asked him what his biggest concern was heading into the harvest season.
There's always concerns, weather, labor, birds.
Beyond the everyday uncertainties of farming, heavy tariffs have put even more pressure on America's farms. In October, the Arizona Farm Bureau wrote a letter to President Trump saying farmers were at a breaking point, citing collapsing crop prices, soaring production costs, and ongoing trade disputes. As I talk with McGuire, he agrees that the industry is at a breaking point. But it's clear that many of these challenges existed even before President Trump took office.
Just because of the poor years we've had financially the last couple, I think the industry for a lot of people is at a breaking point. You know, how many more cuts of acres can we make? How much can we reduce workforce?
How much have you cut back from growing?
We're probably down over the last 5 years, 30%. So it's a fairly sizable number. We do operate on thin margins, but we're survived. We're making changes on the ranch with personnel, with equipment. You know, like we haven't bought any new tractors in 2 years for that reason. We're just kind of staying here, staying afloat, doing our deal and trying to be a little bit profitable.
America's farms have been gradually shrinking. USDA data shows the number of farms fell about 8% since 2017, and farmland acreage has also declined. But as labor needs continue to weigh on farmers, McGuire says reduction in acres has made pre-harvest staffing less of a challenge.
With the cut in acres, we have enough domestic labor now to take care of that.
But as soon as harvest begins, the need for extra labor quickly rises.
You know, the estimate is 30 to 40% of the workforce moves down, but the other part of the workforce are either here already or there's a lot of workers brought in now for the harvest.
McGuire says their workforce is a mix of domestic employees, workers from Sonora, Mexico, who cross the border, and H-2A workers.
Andamos limpiando la romana, lechuga romana.
Juan Chung is a mayordomo, Spanish for foreman or supervisor. He works for a local farming company and oversees a crew of about 35 workers. Not only does he work in the fields, but he also drives the bus that transports his crew each day, keeping everyone organized and on task.
Ahora empezamos a las 7. 7 son 8 horas siempre. Se pone así que se aclarece más temprano, pues entramos más temprano.
He tells me they usually start around 7 a.m., depending on the daylight.
De San Luis, Arizona, y Somerton, y una parte de Yuma.
His crew is made up of domestic workers from San Luis, Somerton, and Yuma. Chung recently returned from Salinas, where he had gone to follow the agricultural work. He says he hasn't had any trouble filling his bus because everyone is eager to work this season. I asked him how the ag season went in California and whether he encountered any of the ice raids that picked up over the summer.
No me tocó ver nada.
He says he didn't get to see any of the raids, but he definitely heard about the raids in Oxnard. Images showing federal agents chasing workers across fields circulated online, leaving many farm workers feeling uneasy.
Pues está mal porque pues no lo dejan trabajar a uno.
Chung doesn't think it's right. He says these are workers who are just trying to do their jobs. As the harvest season begins in Yuma and additional workers arrive, McGuire doesn't foresee those raids happening here. He says his company had no issues in California.
No, we haven't seen anything per se in Salinas out in the fields. There's been some in town, mostly gang-related from what we're told, but they're leaving the farm workers alone for the most part right now.
Do you foresee any of that coming down here, happening here?
Presently, from the media presses from the White House and from Department of Homeland Security, it's not their focus. So I would hope not. I'd hope they let these people who just want to work and then go back home. But in Arizona, you got to remember we're all e-verify here.
While McGuire isn't worried about ICE raids, he says the dependence on foreign workers through the H-2A guest worker program remains high.
When the harvest guys come down, I would venture to guess the harvest people might be as high as 75% H-2A workers. I think H-2A guest worker programs are here to stay. If you go out and talk to those workers, that all they want to do is come across, work hard, earn their money, go back home.
With the ebb and flow of worker shortages, farmers have turned to automated machines. McGuire says they have implemented some equipment that has reduced the need for extra hands in the field, but says much of the machinery that's out there is expensive and not yet perfected.
Labor will always be needed for no other reason than even with the automatic thinners and the weeders and everything we talked about. Like this year, we were on a roll to get 85-90% of the crop thinned with the thinners. And then it started raining here and there and here and there. And then, so by the time that happened, the ground was too wet, crop was too big, we had to take it out. We had to thin it by hand. So yeah, there's probably always gonna be a need for hand thinning.
More automation may be where farming is headed. Yuma County is already working to expand high-speed broadband across farmland to support smart technology. Still, until that infrastructure is fully up and running, farmers like McGuire stay steady and hope for a strong harvest.
Romaine today is starting to be harvested. By the end of the week, there'll be some iceberg harvested. As we start the season, the quality should be great. There should be more ample supplies. And hopefully people will go back to eating more healthy.
For KAWC News, I'm Alexandra Rangel.
Coming up after the break, this week was Transgender Awareness Week. We'll speak with Arizona Western College students who say they find acceptance at their college.
Funding for Arizona Edition comes from listeners just like you. Your continued support allows us to bring you insightful conversations about issues and events impacting our community. Thanks to you, we are able to highlight the people and voices of Yuma and La Paz counties and encourage civil conversations around water, agriculture, healthcare, education, and much more. Please continue to tune in to Arizona Edition, and thank you for helping us keep our community informed.
This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. I'm Victor Calderon. This past week was Transgender Awareness Week. KAWC Education Solutions reporter Cisco Stargazer visited with the GSA Club at Arizona Western College to learn more about what the trans student experience might actually look like today.
I know you all heard about this news, which is why we brought snacks for celebration. They almost got rid of same-sex marriage. This week, they almost got rid of same-sex marriage. Luckily, the hearing was rejected. And we got to keep our rights to marry someone with the same sex. However, we don't want that to happen again, that risk. We want to push. We want to be loud. We want people to know that we're here. That we're here, we're queer, and we're not going anywhere. We want to be f***ing annoying. Oops. We want to be annoying, we want to be loud, we want to be expressive, okay? We want America to know that we ain't going anywhere.
At a recent meeting of the Gay Straight Alliance at Arizona Western College, students celebrated, not gaining new rights, but keeping the ones they already have. One student, Levi Kessler, summed up how that felt.
This is how, like, tumultuous the current political climate has gotten, that we are celebrating the fact that we kept something rather than we gained something. Like, it feels really, I don't know if I would use the word dystopian, but it's kind of sad. It's a bit melancholy to think that, like, We are so stuck in the current state of politics that we can't really achieve more than what we have right now. It's upsetting.
And it was with that sense of political weariness that GSA students marked the beginning of Transgender Awareness Week, which runs November 13th through 19th. The week leads into Transgender Day of Remembrance on November 20th, which honors the memory of trans people lost to anti-transgender violence. Nationally, transgender communities have faced a rising number of bills that would restrict access to healthcare, education, legal recognition, and full participation in public life. Nevertheless, they persist, so we wanted to know what it's like for trans college students in Yuma.
Generally, in Yuma itself, I haven't seen a ton of nice comments. It's mostly just been hateful. However, at AWC, I've seen the complete opposite. It's like a totally different world where I've seen like so many supportive people or compliments on just anything small, like an outfit.
That was Jessica Preby, a trans feminine student. For Levi, who is non-binary and trans masculine, the local climate has been easier than expected.
Arizona used to be a red state, but we've kind of been getting going like purple and then kind of blue in the past couple of years. So I've been feeling really grateful for that. When I was in high school, I would send emails to all of my teachers being like, hey, call me this name and use these pronouns for me, and all of them respected it. I was really surprised by that, actually.
Another student, AJ Ramos, says the campus environment has made it safer to be herself.
Well, first of all, I have worn women's clothes in classrooms before, and it seems professors don't take note of that. They still see me as a saint student as I go into class, as always. And I think the professors around here are pretty progressive. So I think that if we continue with this kind of like, I don't know, progression or not even progression, just normal attitude towards each other, then I don't think that we have much of a problem around here. Because even if this is a community college and we come from different places, we still have a pretty good bias around here with how we treat each other. I definitely feel safe most of the time. I don't feel like I'm in danger. I don't feel like there's any like hostility around here. None at all. And I just think this campus is doing really good at what it does, being accepting.
But for Elliot, a gender-fluid transmasculine person, being closeted profoundly impacts the way he navigates the world.
I'm not fully out. Like, I'm not out to, like, family and stuff. But I'm out to my friends. And I don't know if I'm just lucky, but most of my friends have been very accepting. But being gender-fluid is difficult because when you come out, no one really knows what that is. It's so difficult to fall within an identity that's not well-known because you have to get people's first reactions to something that they've never heard of before.
Elliot explained gender fluidity means your sense of gender can vary with time. But for themselves, the easy definition is,
I'm just a trans guy. And my gender's a little, you know, funky.
Another thing we learned from the students is that transitioning isn't a uniform experience.
I view it as like a train. You start from the back where, like the caboose where you just discovered that you are trans. Then you moved on to the next car where you, I'm going to use myself as an example. You try on a few feminine clothing and realize like, hey, I like this. And it goes on from there. But that train is not a singular train. You could hop off at that station and go to the social train and just transition socially without going on the meds. Or you could go full way with surgeries and everything. It is the ultimate form, in my opinion, of freedom of expression. And that train's infinite. It can go on forever until you hop off and say, I'm not getting back on that train. I have defined myself as who I want to be.
For many, family acceptance shapes that journey. Jessica described conflict with her grandparents early in her transition.
But it got to a point where the arguing and everything got so much of a toll on myself. I almost did, because I am very open about this. I almost did end up taking my life because I could not handle my family falling into shambles.
So sorry, Jessica.
It's okay. Everything is so wonderful now. They are very supportive. But the thing that I think really defined my moment, because I was really thinking about going back just for family. The moment that defined it is when I overheard a call with my mother talking to them. And what I think really turned them to my side was when she said, listen, you don't understand what has been going on through our child's mind. You can either have a dead grandson or you could have a transgender daughter. and it is up to you. But if you choose to have a dead son, I would never forgive you. And then from that moment forward, he started rethinking it and even has started going by my new name and pronouns. And it's been such an amazing process to see somebody who was very stuck in the ways that he was born in change.
Levi shared how they moved out because of their father's discomfort and intolerance. But their dad also turned around.
I actually ended up moving out of my parents' house for a year because even though my dad had never said anything to me personally, I could tell that, like, the household was very tense. I could tell that I was the source of it because of, like, my parents were, like, diametrically opposed on, like, how they felt about me being queer. So I was like, okay, if I just remove myself from the situation, hopefully it'll be better. And what actually ended up happening when I moved out was I ended up actually reconciling with my dad. We had a really long, like, text chain, and he kind of apologized to me. He was like, hey, I know I haven't really talked to you a lot, but I still love you as my kid. It's going to take me a while to get used to the pronouns and the name and stuff, but I love you and I support you. And that was really big. That was really, really huge because I was never expecting that to happen ever. I was so ready to go, like, no contact with my dad. Like, that's how serious it was getting for me. But him saying that was really huge for me. And I actually ended up moving back in with my parents.
Students say AWC could improve by offering more gender-neutral restrooms and gender-inclusive housing. Peers, they say, can help simply by avoiding assumptions and avoiding stares. Looking ahead, Jessica hopes for something simple.
I've had people just being so upset with the thought of me being a transgender person that it feels very hostile. And I can understand that it may be different around the world. I've never gone around the world, but I can hope that, especially here in Yuma, where we are mostly consisted of an older generation, that we are brought to light and saying, these people are going to exist. Just be okay with us. You don't have to even interact with us. Just don't hate us.
For Arizona Edition, I'm Cisco Stargazer, and this reporting is supported by a grant from the Arizona Local News Foundation.
KAWC's Arizona Edition is a production of KAWC, Colorado River Public Media. Questions or comments are welcome. Send them to azed@kawc.org. Our theme music was used with permission and composed by Stephen Hennig and performed by members of the Yuma Jazz Company. More information at yumajazz.com. Past shows and podcast information is available online. Just visit kawc.org for more information or search Arizona Edition wherever you get your podcasts. You can also take KAWC with you wherever you go. Just download the KAWC COFA app and the listening is in your hands. I'm Victor Calderon. This is KAWC's Arizona Edition. Thanks for listening.